You're listening to The Deceptionists. On this episode, Caroline, Kelly, and Dave speak with special guest Sarah Kuhn to discuss the genre of romance, or as we like to call them, kissing books. Oh, I think I have cooties.
Oh, fine romance with no kisses. Oh, fine romance, my friend, this is. We should be like a couple of hot tomatoes.
You're listening to The Deceptionists, Truth Through Fiction, a fortnightly or so podcast all about the craft of fiction writing. We strive to bring a sense of community to the solitary life of the writer. My name is Caroline Pruitt, and joining me are regular Deceptionist cast members Kelly Stevenson.
Hello.
Dave Acampo.
Hey, folks.
And our very special guest today, Sarah Kuhn.
Hello.
We've been working through some of the major genres of fiction writing with the specific goal of figuring out how to apply things we learn from these genres to our own writing. If you look back on our feed, you can find the shows we've done about horror, science fiction, and fantasy. And also we had a show before that about genre in general. Today's topic is romance. And I should say on our earlier show where we discussed genre, which was me and Dave and Paul, who's not here with us today, it was very clear that romance was the one genre that we had the least to say about. So for this show, we wanted to do a few things. One was to make sure to get Kelly on the show because she was interested in chiming in on this and also inviting Sarah. And Sarah also recommended a book that we will talk about a little down the line so that we all had some kind of baseline. It became clear even in our pre-show talk that this may well turn out to be a remedial romance show for me and Dave. And of course, I mean romance, the genre, not the awkward way that sounded when I said it.
I don't know what you're talking about. I know you're supposed to get flowers for girls and...
oh, Dave. Not that I'm doing any better. And I feel like I'm the girl, and I'm the one who should know this stuff, and I clearly do not. But we're going to start out introducing our guest, Sarah. And Sarah is the author of the geek romantic comedy novella, One Con Glory, which I got a chance to read before it was published, and that was very exciting. It's an awesome book, and anybody who hasn't read it should pick that up. It is also...
And they should read Caroline's quote on the back of the book. Yeah.
I forgot about that. I do have a blurb.
That's you do.
Yeah. And since that was great. And it is billed as the geek romantic comedy, but we started talking about it as a romance novel at some point. And then that was one of the reasons we were interested in getting Sarah on the show. I should also say that One Con Glory is currently in development as a feature film, and that Sarah has written for publications such as Backstage, IGN.com, The Hollywood Reporter, and StarTrek.com is maybe my favorite credit there. She is part of the Mighty Alert Nerd Collective and was featured on San Diego Comic-Con's popular Geek Girls Exist panel last year. So, hi, Sarah.
Hello. Thank you for that introduction.
And we're really glad you could be here with us. And because, again, some of us don't really know what we're talking about.
And that's like the best intro yet, by the way, Sarah. You're really lucky. Mostly we just say, yeah, and there's this guy. I know him.
I'm very flattered.
That's awesome. And I wanted this to start out because I do keep making the point that I at least am stupid about this topic. And so I'd like us to all kind of talk about what our background is coming in with romance. And we'll get to Sarah at the end when we're talking about her book. But I wanted to start out with Kelly. Can you talk about like what's your background with this genre?
Let's see. I don't want to say that I dismiss this genre as being easy, but when I'm looking for something to read that I don't want to have to really, really think about, I generally reach for like my mom's stack of romance novels. I've I've specced out a couple of just random romance novel stories because there are a few times when I've said, no, I'm really going to write a novel now. And I figure that romance is the easiest place to start, which is not actually all that true, it turns out. And I'm actually currently writing a romance novel. So that's me.
And Dave.
Well, I mean, I guess I wanted to be on this show. I wanted to be the guy on this show because I think that it was really interesting to me because that's something that romance is something that I've not really read a lot of or any of really. And that was important to me because I wanted to sort of get out of the boundaries of, or, you know, Kelly's talked before about comfort zones and things like that. I'm like, you know what? What can we learn from romance as a genre? And so I've been really giving a lot of thought to that, and I've been starting to think about, you know, what is a romance? I mean, what do we think about as a romance novel versus, you know, what is it historically? And what about in film? And are there guy romances? And I don't mean bromances. I know I have to put something in the swear jar now. But what I mean is, like something like, I know Caroline and I are both big fans of the film Say Anything. Pretty much any movie with John Cusack in it is kind of a guy romance movie. but those are usually sort of put forward as romantic comedies. And I don't know. I don't know. I want to get into this a little bit later as we talk about the definition. But I guess, so the stuff that I would think of as knowing romantic fiction would be more romantic comedy stuff. And I have very little experience with the classic romance novel that I just think of as Fabio covers and bodice ripping and, you know, steamy scenes and this and that. But something that's geared towards women and is, you know, being swept away by pirates or gentlemen or, you know, or I don't know, whatever. That I mean, pretty much the stereotypes. That's where I am with it.
But you've, like, written characters that have romantic relationships, right?
Absolutely. Right. But okay. Not something I consider a romance as part of a genre. But
okay.
I mean, I've written romantic relationships, and I've written relationships, and that's an important distinction, too. But I think as we start defining it, I'll talk more about that.
Thanks, Dave. I guess, I don't know if I just didn't grow up, like, my mom didn't read romance novels, so I didn't see them around the house. That's because that's where I hear a lot of women sort of talk about, and guys too, the guys who will admit to it, which is not a few guys, just would sort of grow up around them. So I never really did that. I read all the, you know, the Sweet Valley High, and I read the Sunfire romances, which are like historical romances that are aimed at teenagers. And so I kind of, you know, but sometime how around like 16 or 17, I was too old for that. And I never really, and I will mention this because I'll bring this up now. The book that Sarah recommended is called Compromised. It's by a writer named Kate Noble, and it's set in the Regency time period, so which is early 19th century in England. And I was reading this book, and I got to the point where it's not an extremely explicit sex scene by standards of everything I have ever read. But it was an explicit scene for what I expected to see in that book. So that was sort of the moment where I was like, I really have no idea what this genre is.
That blew it wide open, huh?
Right. And it's not necessarily that made me want to read more or read less. It was just sort of like, I was like, oh, and I guess I thought like modern romance novels, like Danielle Steele, or what, is that even a romance novel?
Yes.
Okay. See, I thought they would
have
all
the stuff. That was actually where I started, because that was what the biggest chunk of my mom's bookshelf was, Danielle Steele, when I was young.
So anyway, I haven't read very much, obviously, because I was completely had my mind blown by this, you know, romance novel that I understand is fairly typical. And so that was different to me. But I'm interested in this conversation because I've had this a lot. I mean, it's a genre that's definitely read a lot by women. It's written a lot by women. I don't think it should be dismissed I think those are all reasons that romance isn't taken very seriously. And I feel like there's a real trend, and I'm going to flip over to Sarah in a minute, and maybe she can bring some of this up, of like people writing really intelligently about romance. There's some websites and publications that are really devoted to, you know, to really a critical discussion of romance and still having fun with it and treating it as a genre that should be taken seriously the way some of the others that we've talked about have. So, Sarah.
Wait, can we do one thing before we move on
to Sarah? You reminded
me of something. And when you said, you know, like mom's having it lying around, it totally reminded me. Okay, confession. From about eighth grade to midway through high school, I watched Days of Our Lives regularly. So I don't know how that fits into the romance conversation, but what happened was my mom watched a soap opera. I think she watched, what did she watch? Guiding Light, maybe something like that. But I was in eighth grade. My parents left on a fifth grade field trip with my sister for a week. I had to stay at my friend Matt's house. Matt's mom watched Days of Our Lives every day. Matt, therefore, watched Days of Our Lives every day. And I, therefore, started watching Days of Our Lives that week and then had to sneak up to the upstairs black and white television to watch Days of Our Lives at 3 p.m. after school every day after that for a couple years. Totally get the people picking it up. And I get the whole mothers to daughters thing. It's just funny that it sometimes can happen with sons. I think what appealed to me in watching that show is those are sort of multiple thread shows, and there's a lot of action, and particularly that soap opera, there was a lot of action and adventure in there. So I think I latched onto that and then like got snuck the romance into the midst of it, which is how
Would
a lot of guys approach.
Was that when Marlena was a demon and Stefano was, that was before all of that?
Yeah. This was the John Black character. They still thought he was Roman Brady. Yeah, there you go. That's my era. That's my confession.
We'll let Sarah talk about how awesome she is in a second because she's awesome. Sorry, that came out a little bit wrong. I will say that I believe that soap operas have the exact same comforting structure that romance novels tend to have, where you sort of kind of know what's going to happen and you're sitting there letting it happen to you, because you could watch Days of Our Lives today and half those characters are still on the show and they're having the exact same discussions now as they were 20 years ago. That's right. And sadly, I know that for a fact.
I was a Young and the Restless watcher for a while, and I still like I think Jack and Victor are having the same fight every single day.
On for probably the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, are you also a soap person?
I'm actually not. I remember that I used to, whenever I would visit one of my grandmas, they always had their one soap, and I would watch the two episodes while I was there. And I was always fascinated that Friday was a cliffhanger, because it seemed to me as a kid that Friday should be when you wrap up your storyline in a satisfying manner. So I was really fascinated by that element, but I never, I wasn't allowed actually to watch very much TV as a kid. So I never really hooked into soap operas.
And what about the romance angle? Because you had mentioned, one of the things I asked you when we were bringing you on is, did you think that your book was a romance novel? And you had an interesting answer for that.
Well, thank you for thinking my answer was interesting. But basically, I guess my answer was, when I first started writing it, no. And it wasn't until I really got to the end of, I guess, sort of the first act or the first section that I realized it was a romance. And I actually think that made it a better story.
How so?
I just think that when I first started, I think it was sort of like this story about these people at a convention, and it's like a girl at a convention. And that was really like the extent of my idea. Just this specific geek girl character at a convention, and I gave her like a want. She wants this action figure. I don't think that there's like a lot of places you can go with that vague of an idea. I think that once I realized that, oh, it's actually about this romance, like that's the most interesting part about it. That's what's sort of going to drive a lot of the story, and what does, I think, end up driving a lot of the story, and what ends up being sort of the biggest stake at the end is like, is she going to get together with the hero? I think that sort of propelled it and makes it a much more interesting thing to read, I hope.
And what about how that kind of fits in the romance genre community in general?
Well, it has been called a romance novel, and I'm very proud of that, because, you know, I didn't have a ton of experience actually reading like a lot of traditional romances when I started writing it. And I think that I'm very flattered that, you know, regular readers of romance enjoy it and think that it's a couple that's like worth rooting for. Yeah, so that's really cool. And as far as how it fits in, I'm not sure. I think other people would probably answer that question better than I could.
Well, I think it's interesting when we talk about, you know, we're talking about romance as a genre, and it seems to me as we're defining it, we've defined different genres. And again, we're defining these loosely for our listeners, and you know, there's exceptions to every rule. But you know, we talked about sci-fi as being something where there was some building block of science where we were using some scientific idea but leaping forward from what the mundane reality and speculating on something that might be. With horror, we talked about, you know, the core emotion being fear, so it seems to me with romance that what we talk about. What we're talking about here is that relationship. But it's not just any relationship. It seems to me, if we're defining romance, that it's that sort of getting together. It's that courtship. Will they, won't they? Do they really like each other? Don't they? And I think that's very common, a very common sort of romantic relationship thing. It's often bundled into others. It's very often, almost always, bundled into other stories. You know, I mean, almost every story is some form of love story, whether it's a familial love or a romantic love or even a love, a passion for something. But you know, with the romance novel, it seems to be about those people getting together, finding each other. And I think that's a very, very intrinsic human thing that we think about a lot. And so I can totally see, Sarah, where you would find your story by finding that core theme. You know, like you gave her an obstacle, and then somewhere along the way you realize, wow, it's not, you know, the thing getting in her way is actually what the story is really about, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing getting in her way is the thing that gets in a lot of protagonist's way, and a lot of romance protagonist's way, because the thing getting in her way is, you know, herself. She has to deal with that first before she can be like a mature human being and have a mature human relationship.
Do we want to talk of, actually, I have a question that I want to read that we got off Twitter that I think might be a good way to talk a little more about the defining quality of romance and then go from that into the piece that I had to read. And this is from someone named Chris Lewis, who is CKL spelled out on Twitter. And he said, I thought about, I'm assuming it's a he, actually that might not be correct, but okay. Chris said,
I think he is. He okay. Answered a question of his on the last podcast too.
Okay. And Chris said, I thought about writing a romance for NaNoWriMo last year, which is National Novel Writing Month, but I had a tragic love story in mind, but the contributors on the romance forums insisted it had to have a cheery, upbeat, happy ending. A story that ends in misery couldn't be a romance. And then he went on, he said he brought up Romeo and Juliet because he thought to him that was a classic romance, and that didn't convince them. So then the question is, do romance stories have to end, have a happy ending? And I guess the first part of my response is, of course, you can write any kind of romance story with any kind of ending, but does it have to end a certain way to be a, quote, romance? What do we think?
I think the answer is yes. I think, first of all, write a tragic romance because that sounds awesome and I totally would read a tragic romance. But if you're going to talk to the romance writers in the romance forum about your romance, you need to have a happy ending because that's a romance novel, capital R, capital N.
Excuse me, is that the expectation of the audience in this case?
Yes.
That if you go to the romance aisle, it has to have a happy ending?
Oh, yes. My grandmother would just, she would like write an angry letter if the romance novels that she reads on a regular basis didn't end happily.
So happy is what?
And then they lived happily ever after, pretty much.
So that's not kind of taking into account the sort of what seems to be evolving maybe more in supernatural romance, but the team A and the team B? Because once you bring that in, you can't actually have a happy ending for everyone, right?
Well, doesn't Twilight end with a happy ending for everyone?
Because, well, Yeah, that's
true. Because it turns out that she was never his soulmate to begin with, right?
So it's kind of the it's like the Shakespearean comedy happy ending where the people that maybe you thought were going to get together didn't get together, but everybody gets somebody. Everybody's paired off that for the end.
Yes,
that's what I call the some kind of wonderful genre. Oh wait, what? Are we talking about John Hughes movies or Shakespeare? I'm not sure.
If you think about like even something as classic as like Sleepless in Seattle, like the guy that she ends up dating, she's dating in the beginning, it turns out he's just kind of a mad douchebag, and we walk away from, like the guy who doesn't get the girl at the end, there's always a reason, which is actually frustrating, and it's an obvious reason. It's not just, well, it didn't work out for you.
The Ralph Bellamy role, yes.
Yeah.
Well, Caroline, you tweeted something, and maybe you were working up to this, but I'm going to spoil it for you. You tweeted something earlier today, which I believe was from an NPR blog that was about the it's about the documentary about Swell Season.
The Swell Season, yes.
Right. So this is the two leads from the movie Once, which again is I would call that a romance, but it's a romance that doesn't really end on a happy note. It ends on, they don't get together in the end. So does the romance paperback market have a very different demographic than, I mean, do we use romance in film more broadly? Because, I mean, there's a film that I would call that a romance, and I guess the documentary also kind of points to a romance or a failed romance. But I guess it doesn't call itself a romance. It's a documentary. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I was thinking about this earlier today because I saw that that question pop up, and I think that I'm going to try to make this somewhat coherent, but I was thinking about romance stories that I like that maybe don't have an ending where the couple gets together, and I think Once is a great example, because if they got together, that's not how that story should end. Like, I think it very much depends on not the kind of, but the story that you're trying to tell. And if that's the story that you're telling, that's wonderful. You know, I think that film is amazing. I do think, though, when you are telling a romance story, no matter what the format, there is maybe a higher degree of difficulty in ending it without the two people getting together. Because when I was trying to think of romance stories that end, like, I guess, quote unquote, unhappily or with people not ending up together, a lot of the examples I came up with were things I don't like.
Does the lady die?
Well, yeah, okay. Like the one that I came up with is a very popular book that I don't want to name. One, because I kind of hate this book, but also because
it's going to be a movie.
Yeah, you're right.
Sorry, I've given too many hints.
It's going to be a movie. You know which one I'm talking about.
Oh, you're going to ruin something for me, aren't you?
Pretend you didn't hear this. Go ahead.
It's all right. Go ahead.
Oh, I think I know now, too. Yes, I know something.
It's a romance book. It's pitched, as a romantic story. And it's these two people over time who are best friends, who are obviously supposed to be together. We know that. We're just waiting for them to catch up, which is sort of a classic, classic structure. And they get together, and then she dies in this sort of horrible, random way. And I just remember that it made me so angry, not just because she dies, but because, one, it's the woman who has to die. But also then there are several chapters after that sort of exploring like the lessons that the man learns because she died. And it's supposed to be this sort of like uplifting ending. And I just thought it was cheap and not earned and kind of like an FU to the audience. Like, it actually made me really angry. So I think that if that is where your story is going, if it's going towards two people, not ending up together for whatever reason, you have to make me really believe it, and it's probably going to be a little more difficult to write.
Yeah, and I actually have a counter for that, and this example probably reads fairly well into what I'm going to read for Show Your Work. I read a novel, and I guess I won't say which one. By a well-known male author who I like a lot, who has written several books that are sort of on the in a similar kind of vein. It's a male author. He writes kind of for guys, but I think a lot of women like his work as well. And this book was very clearly, I mean, I'm like, this is a romance novel. But and it's about, he's an older guy at this point. It's about older characters who are kind of middle-aged and have been in relationships and are kind of finding a way to connect with other people after the relationships they were in failed, which I thought, I'm like, well, that's a really interesting way to use that kind of romance structure because it's not, this is going to be the first and only one love of your life. It's kind of how you deal with a life you've led with a lot of mistakes. And I realized as I got toward the end of the book, and I'm like, oh, I should have known this because I've read several other novels this guy wrote that have a similar thing. Instead of giving us the ending where these two characters do get together and do make a decision, he gives us kind of an ambiguous ending. And I think you can read it and say, okay, I believe these two people got together, but you don't really get it. You don't get it on the page. And there's also kind of some metatextual commentary that's like, if it had been a movie, their lives would have ended like this. But, and I'm like, you know, the fact there, the plot of this book gives plenty of ways that you could have an emotionally satisfying thing with these characters getting together. And I feel like you're not doing it because you somehow want us to feel like this is a more important book than that it would be. And I'm like, you know, just, and I'm like, I feel like it would be too hard to actually make a plot that works and is emotionally satisfying for these grown-up characters. So you're just going to pretend that it can't happen because it's not a movie.
So in other words, it's almost like the writer, and I actually know which book you're talking about this time. I was wrong on the Sarah thing, but this one I know.
I hope I'm wrong on the Sarah thing, by the way, because I will be so ticked off.
I believe you
happens.
Are. If you came to the same conclusion that I did, then you are wrong.
Good.
Or you're
we'll
not.
About,
wait.
Okay. Well, I'll let you know in like probably 2 months when I get to the end
so,
of the third one.
So what I want to get at here is that it's almost like it sounds like he was writing something that might fit into a traditional romance structure, but then pulled back at the last minute to be more literary, but didn't earn the literariness, rather just sort of like tried to be like, oh, I don't want this to be typed into this because it can't go that way, when that's really the direction the story was heading.
And there was plenty enough of the other material in the book, the context of the characters' lives and everything, that made it, you know, mature and not, you know, if he was worried about it being like a cartoony book, that wasn't happening. But I think it was sort of a little bit of you make your book worse by trying to go for some kind of importance rather than looking at somebody who does this kind of structure well and makes it work.
I can kind of see that being a guy thing too, because I think we are sort of, I mean, again, I'm coming at it from the stereotypical guy thing where I was not raised reading or thinking that romance fiction was something that guys read or anything. And so falling into that structure without meaning to or even in Hollywood terms, that sort of happy ending is something that, you know, you might shy away from. So I could almost see myself doing the same thing. And I think that's a really important point as we're talking about writing and writing, you know, romantic fiction is that, you know, you got to commit to it. And that really some of the most popular stuff is that where you can have a happy ending. And I think it's a fine line because you got to write that happy ending, you got to earn that happy ending, but you can't pile on too much sappiness and you really do have to earn it first, or else it comes off as false and saccharine and nobody likes that. So, you know, if we're talking about romance, like, how do you tread that line with your characters? How do you build your story to get that?
I think. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go.
No, I was just going to say, I think that it does come back to telling the story that you're telling. I know that sounds stupid, but like, you know, if the you know, like the book you're describing, Caroline, like, it sounds like the story he was telling was probably meant to end one way and he chose to end it a different way. And it's sort of this inorganic thing that just ends up feeling weird. And I also think that the book I was describing earlier, I do think there was a little bit of like, I can make this more important by adding this, which people won't expect, which is different and makes it not a romance or whatever. And you know, that I think is sort of like betraying the story in a way. Like, it's not really looking at what is going to make this story end in a natural way. I think that however the story ends, it has to be for whatever kind of romance you're trying to do. It just has to be emotionally satisfying is the bottom line. Like once it doesn't end with them getting together, but it's very emotionally satisfying. Like you right. feel like it ends like it was supposed to, and you just feel like satisfied by that story.
But at the same time with Once, I wonder if part of the reason why the ending of the movie was satisfying at the time was because you knew in real life those two actors had a romantic relation. Like,
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. And I found it very satisfying as it was.
Yeah.
It felt so much better. Like, after it was like, oh, they really do love each other. And there is a world where they get a happy ending. And then when they broke up, it was like, no!
Can I say something horrible? I thought it was creepy when I realized they were actually together. Like, I liked the movie until then. But now I kind of want to see the documentary because maybe it'll change my mind.
I do as well.
It's creepy that he's, like, the best friend of her parents.
Yeah, that was the creepy. Yeah.
Yeah. But the movie brought them together. That's beautiful. And, yeah.
The movie was very sweet and lovely. I agree.
And are they still together? Do they still perform together at this point?
I know they're
not together, but do they? Because when I heard that news that they broke up, all I could think about was, so are you still performing together? How does that work when you start dating someone else? Like, is that awkward? My mind as a writer starts going to that stuff. So, you know, it's funny because when we talk about romance, we're talking about romantic relationships, we're talking about getting together. And a lot of the fiction that I like to read is kind of the other end of that, which is, you know, stuff that like someone like Raymond Carver would write, which is this sort of relationship fiction about people and about what people do to each other and how they can tear each other down or, you know, and it can get kind of ugly. And so, I don't know, my mind goes to that stuff all the time. But I like a good romantic, you know, ending too. I mean, it's what we talk about. You have to earn it, and I guess I had a thought I was going to go with, and I completely lost it. So somebody else save me right now.
Okay, well, I think what you're saying sort of is what it boils down to. You have to earn it either way. If you want it to be happy romantic ending where people get together, you have to earn that. If you want it to be tragic in some way, like someone, you know, dying in a horrible accident, like I just described, you have to earn that too. Like you have to either way, you have to earn your ending.
Have any of you guys ever written a story and then thought, you know what, I want to write something more romantic, and so then tried to shift it so that it wouldn't be so, like maybe you're writing something that's ended up being kind of dark and, you know, people are cheating on each other or something and you wanted to go more romantic, or vice versa? Have you written something that you thought, oh, this is too, you know, too Hollywood or too saccharine and I want to shake it up? Has anybody ever changed as they were trying to write?
Can we save that, I think, because okay. I want to go ahead and... No, but I think that's a really good question, but I think that's a long discussion. And so I thought maybe I could read my piece and then we can get into that. Is that all right?
Absolutely.
Because I think I had a thought of that, and I know Kelly had a thought on that too, I think.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's get into it. Show your work.
All right. Well, I will read, and I will admit I did not... I finished this shortly before... We went on, so I don't know. I haven't read it all the way through, and it might not. There might be little things that I stare at and don't understand what I wrote. But that's the extent of my apology. And so I'm just going to start here. I don't have a title. Kate made it to the bar just in time to catch Harry's last encore. She'd intended to leave Chapel Hill right after work and get to Richmond in time to surprise him with a good luck kiss before the show. Then Stephen from finance class cornered her on her way out to say it was no big deal, but he'd lost the flash drive with the PowerPoint slides for their group presentation due Monday, and maybe she could help him reconstruct the data? Kate miraculously fixed that disaster and got on the road by 9, hit traffic on the way out of town, then raced up I-85, playing bootlegs her brother had sent her from the band's current tour and praying she wouldn't get a ticket. It was getting close to 1 when she found the venue and a parking spot that was arguably legal. From the sidewalk, she could hear Harry and Doug trading guitar riffs. It was them. They were hers. They sounded good. It had been so goddamn long. And she was stepping into the dark, crowded room with the doorman held out a tattooed arm. $10 cover, he said. Are you serious? Kate asked, and he cocked his head like, why wouldn't he be? Normally, she would have appreciated the commitment to business. the band was getting a decent percentage of the door receipts. But it was late, and they were on the last song. Kate knew it was the last because they always saved Gone By Morning for last. And she knew Gone By Morning like she knew her own heartbeat, because she'd been in bed with Harry when he started writing it, tapping the chords out on the bare skin of her arm. Harry's bourbon-rich voice drifted out the door. They had a verse and a half and another couple solos to go. "I'm with them," she shouted over the music, pointing in the direction of the stage she couldn't see. "Kate Mortimer." Tattoo guy started reaching for a clipboard, and Kate touched his arm. "I'm not on the list, see? I came to surprise them, but there was traffic, and look, I'm the business manager." "Uh-huh." His eyes traveled down her body. Kate hadn't yet worked out the perfect ensemble that said, "I'm getting an MBA, but also, I'm totally with the band." Something told her these fishnets, short skirt, and motorcycle boots weren't the answer, even combined with the blazer she'd thrown on over a t-shirt advertising Maker's Mark whiskey. She'd have to re-strategize. Maybe she should get a tattoo. "I know her." A shaggy-haired guy leaned out the door and said, before Kate could place him, "That's the drummer's sister. Come on, sugar." "Thanks." Kate shrugged at the doorman and slipped in, giving Shaggy a smile she hoped wasn't too falsely enthusiastic. Drummer's sister wasn't so bad. It wasn't like Mort was a disgrace to the family name, at least not musically speaking. And she couldn't talk her way through, and if she couldn't talk her way through in her own right, it was better to be the drummer's sister than the singer's girlfriend. Even if that had been strictly true. And it wasn't true. Because Harry was fun. He was far, far too much fun. Blue-eyed, curly-haired, well-muscled fun who woke you up in the middle of the night to write songs on your skin. But mostly he was a project, a purely professional type of project, who happened to be the blazing hot talent in a band started by her brother and his friends. Four guys who knew a lot about music, but left to their own devices, would have signed record deals drawn up by the same guy who sold them weed. It was best for everyone involved to keep the relationship professional, if, sometimes, professional with benefits. She couldn't get in the room with the band. People were packed shoulder to shoulder, and that was good. "They like us," Kate thought, letting herself be part of that us for a second. She moved to a corner by the bar so she could get an angle on the stage, and there it was. Harry knelt, guitar flipped around so that it lay against his back, while the strap stretched over his chest. He had pulled down the mic stand and was leaning over the mouthpiece, stretching out the last words of the chorus. Sweat plastered dark curls over his forehead, and that sweat got Kate thinking about a hotel shower. The band wasn't staying in a hotel. They were crashing with the owner of a local record store. But with the tour going this well, they could justify splurging. Hell, Kate thought, tonight it's my treat. A hand pulled her sleeve, and she glanced back to see she had drifted toward the merchandise table. The merch girl was beaming at her. Sharon, or Shelley, maybe, the road manager's niece. She had a too bright smile and dyed pink hair, cut like a dandelion. Kate thought she might be sleeping with Mort, but the closest she and her brother ever got to discussing sex was when she asked if he was using protection, and he covered his ears and left the room, so it was ambiguous. But she was cute enough and didn't seem to be a thief, which was as much as you could ask from a merch girl. Another girl reached into the cash box, flipping through a stack of bills, then pointed at the diminished pile of CDs and t-shirts. Kate made a note to put in a new order before the big homecoming show in the fall. She gave Shannon or Shelley or Sharon the thumbs up, and they both turned back toward the stage. Getting lost in the music, Kate listened to the layered sounds of the guitar, the pounding bass, and Mort in the back nailing his drum solo. She'd have to ruffle his hair and congratulate him on that. Then they were done, the crowd cheering and clapping, while Kate mused whether to run and catch them now or work her way backstage. But then Harry stepped up to the mic, and this was different. "Thanks, y'all," he said. "Normally, that'd be our last number, but we thought we'd try something out here. I learned this one for a special girl who, well," he squinted into the lights. "To be honest, I can't see a damn thing in here, but, well." He played a riff on his guitar, and Kate dimly recognized, as she thought this couldn't be right. She hadn't told anyone she was coming. Then Harry played the riff again. The second guitarist answered, and Kate had a series of thoughts in succession. First, she knew what he was playing. Second, she knew the budget for this tour, and they could not afford the rights to cover a fucking Springsteen song. And if they were going to insist on it, it should be a song people were likely to know and not something random like Sherry Darling that really needed a saxophone part to do it justice anyway. And then she turned to see the merch girl, eyes huge, hand over her mouth, starting to jump up and down because, oh yeah, her name was Sherry. On stage, Harry pivoted until his eyes found the girl's corner and he pointed. That's right, Sherry, and he froze for a second then said, Kate. His mouth relaxed into a smile and he drawled, well, this is going to be an interesting night. Then he stepped back, nodded at the band, and they started to play.
Uh-oh. Yay.
Yay.
Thank you for sharing, Caroline.
So there's going to be some kind of trouble.
Or they're going to have a threesome.
That's what he thinks, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. So should I talk a little bit about how I got to that, or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was having a hell of a time with this prompt, because I think what I was thinking was that what defined romance was the formula. And so even though technically the assignment was just to write a scene, and it didn't actually even, I realized, specify that it had to be the couple in the romance or whatever. But I was really sort of thinking, oh, I have to plot a whole novel because that's what romance is, right? And then do a scene from it. And like the formula thing was kind of freezing me. And so what I ended up falling back on is I actually thought of One Con Glory a little bit, Sarah's book. Because I was like, okay, well, why am I interested in that in the beginning? And it's because it's a character who is, you know, kind of a mess and who needs some things. And you get that. And I thought it's interesting to realize that you started that without thinking that it's going to be about the love story, because it's initially about this girl going to this convention to buy her favorite action figure. That's very rare, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, and I was kind of like, and actually the characters in this are from the NaNoWriMo project I did last year, which didn't really have a plot. I was just kind of fooling around with different character dynamics. And this couple was sort of the strongest relationship part, but it didn't really have they fall in love and get together arc, or even a they're together and they break up arc. It was kind of this, I was interested in writing something about a band. And so sort of her relationship with knowing a lot about the music, being really interested in the music and not being part of the band was what was kind of driving that. And so I sat down and I thought, if I was going to take these characters and structure it as a romance, and I don't know, I just kind of came up with this particular scene tonight because I was like, well, what would she do if he's dating somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is the beginning to a book where she realizes that she needs to get out and go meet completely different people and that be the romance, or if it's a story where she gets together with this guy in the end, or if something else happens. But I thought that, you know, my starting point is just, what does this character want? What kind of headspace is she in as far as relationships? And I probably info dumped a little more than I would have, because I would have gotten this all in over a chapter or two, but I wanted to sort of get sort of what the idea was here. So about sort of her place. So I'll shut up now.
Right. But I think you set up a really nice situation there. And I think that's a great example of maybe a little bit of what I was saying earlier, where maybe you had these characters in search of, and they weren't really interconnected in a way where there was a direction. And by thinking about romance and thinking about that formula, and then having to step away from the formula, you still kind of came up with a little bit of a direction that sort of unites the characters in a really interesting way. And what you set up for us right now was a great dilemma, which is, here's a guy that she obviously likes and is having a relationship with, but he's, you know, dating somebody else or seeing somebody else or sleeping with somebody else. And what does that mean for her? So this is the start, as I see it, not knowing what else you've written, this is the start of her story. This is this is either about her, and if it's to follow the Hollywood format, this would be about her realizing this guy's a douchebag, and then at the same time she's going to find the nice she's going to find the nice, humble police officer or whatever who turns out to be the stand-up guy. And maybe I saw Bridesmaids not that long ago. But yeah, anyway, yeah. You know what I'm saying.
Or the bouncer, right, or Shaggy, right. Yeah.
So, but when does this... This is something I wanted to get back to, and this is not, Caroline, this is not about your story, but
no, sure, sure.
When do you get, when does the formula help, and when does it allow us to fall into cliches? I mean, that's my, I guess the danger in all of this. And well, maybe no one has an answer.
No, because I think, it was hard to develop this very much in, and that's actually a good point, because formula is really what I run into with romance, and I think I caught and I'm like, I'm talking as somebody who doesn't finish books, so like I don't finish writing them, so this is my, you know, my very wise advice about the uselessness of formula to not finishing books. But I wanted to develop and what I had developed as I was writing about these characters is like, this guy's not necessarily a douchebag because she's not conveying to him that she wants to date him, you know, so she's conveying that this is a casual relationship. So, and then he's like, okay, well, I'm going to date somebody potentially who wants to date me. Like, that's not necessarily him being a jerk. That's just them, you know, like trying to figure out if what she says she wants in the relationship is really what it is. And I think that that's kind of a more complex idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't necessarily have like, and I like the formula you're talking about. Like, I really liked Bridesmaids. Like, I thought that was a well done formula.
Right.
But
right.
It's very obvious that the guy she's with at the beginning is not the guy she's going to end up with.
Oh yeah, yeah. And again, there's some cases where the formula works. Like, that is a comedy, and I think a lot of what's added to the spine is what makes it funny and unique. And so you can I think in certain things you can use more of a formula. I mean, you know, we're talking about Sarah's book. I mean, you know, yeah, it's about, you know, this girl trying to get a thing, and there's a guy, turns out to be this romantic interest, but it's not, it doesn't fall into cliche, I don't think. It still stays very unique. And I guess one of the things, and I'm going to start to dive into this, and I'm not sure if we want to bring this up yet, but the book that we all kind of looked at, and I'm going to confess to the listeners that I did not finish the book, not because I wasn't enjoying the book, actually, but just I ran out of time. So this is Compromise by Kate Noble, and this was a straight-up romance, and it starts off in that, what is it, like 1829 or something like that. And there's a lot of formulaic structure in there. Now, I liked Kate's voice. I thought there was some very fun dialogue, and it reads very smoothly. It's sort of a, you know how in the 90s there were a lot of those like they would update like Shakespeare and make it like a teenagers in 1997 in high school kind of comedy drama thing. This almost felt like the reverse of that. It's like they were taking a modern rom-com and putting it in a period, because it had a lot of fun. It was very light. It moved, at least in the first 10 chapters that I read. But it created all this sort of, you know, Three's Company kind of situation where everybody's misunderstanding people. And but there was a lot of formula stuff that I felt like, where it's like, and this girl runs into this guy, and they she's mad at him, but clearly there's something there. And, you know, and that's the part where I guess I get muddled with the formula and where you can use it and where you deviate from that and pull away from it.
I have all these thoughts, but I'm so sleepy.
I'm just sorry. Can't,
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go.
I was just going to say, I think the way you just described it, Dave, of sort of a romantic comedy or sort of a fun romantic comedy put into the romance novel structure is probably the reason I love that book so much. Because that is something that is like basically created, like aimed directly at me.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see that.
Since the character, I love the characters in the book. I love that the characters are nerds. I love that they make out in a library. Like, mm-hmm. All these things are sort of like, did you know me before you wrote this book? Did you write it with me? I think that the things that are in that book that maybe seem like part of the romance novel formula, I find comforting. And then the things that are sort of very, I guess, different, or, you know, like you were saying, the voice is very unique. Those are the things I find refreshing. And something about the combo of that is mm-hmm. what makes that book work really well for me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I will say, and again, this is just my own personal bias, like the stuff where, and I want to see what you guys think about this, because I've been thinking about this in terms of romance, you know, for the last couple weeks. The stuff that I think kind of turns me away from romance as a guy is that the romance novel structure, there was, I know Caroline, I think you know this one, but Neil Gaiman, who wrote the Sandman series for DC Vertigo Comics, had a storyline called A Game of You, and towards the end of it, there is a part where they talk about about the difference between boy fantasies and girl fantasies.
And Sarah knows this one too.
and the boy fantasies are that underneath your geeky exterior, you are actually this great hero, and if only everyone could see your strength. Whereas girl fantasies are that your parents are not really your parents; they're actually queens and kings in another land, and they're going to come and sweep you away. And so that plays into that stereotype of what I think about a romance novel, of like the woman getting swept away. And in the beginning of this, in this time period, I think what kind of doesn't appeal to me as much is that there's so much put on getting married or the relationship. And I think that's because I'm not, like, the women that I'm attracted to in my life are women that have passion about something. It's more like the Lois Lane figure. Like, she's already the hot-headed reporter, and she, and she's getting into trouble anyway. And if she falls in love with Superman, so be it. But she's not waiting in an ivory tower for someone to come rescue her or anything. And I guess my stereotype going in is that some of this, like, and again, I only read the first 10 chapters, but in that, there's a lot about society and structure. Oh, you've got to get married. You know, you've got to do this. And there's a little hint that the younger sister, who's a main protagonist in this, is kind of doesn't really follow that so much. But I mean, maybe I didn't read enough. But in the first 10 chapters, if I don't get that, then it kind of turns me away. Whereas if there was a crime and they had to solve their parents' murder, and then she fell in love with the guy during that, I'd be all over it. It's like, as a guy, do I have to be fooled into the romance part of it because I've been, you know, cultured not to put that, you know, to think that?
You may be correct, but I don't think that's just as a guy, because I have a very similar feeling.
Yeah, I'm putting this forward with all my ignorance and bias, you know.
Well, I think part of that is the fact that Sarah picked for us a Regency romance novel. And so in that time period, that was what you did. Like,
right. and that turns me off of that time period.
Yeah. So that sort of for that sort of romance subgenre, that's what that audience is looking for.
Right.
And it's really well done. It was interesting. I went through sort of a romance gauntlet. I finished Mansfield Park, which, I was stunned how much I didn't like Mansfield Park. And then because I kind of wanted to wash it out of my brain, I decided to read, what is it? 9 Rules to Break While Romancing a Rake, I think is the name of it, which is sort of like the complete opposite spectrum. Like, you want to talk about something that is actually set, you know, that is just, we plucked a romantic comedy and dropped it into corset costumes.
Or Vampire Diaries without vampires.
Like, yeah, not about vampires. It really didn't feel like there was anything about it that actually tied it to the period. In fact, the protagonist was so extremely modern in her thinking that it pulled me out of the story, because it was like, this is we're playing dress up with costumes. We're not actually in a Regency setting.
But I haven't read much Regency, so I'm saying this hesitantly, but just the impression that I have is that the appeal of Regency romance written in the 20th or 21st century is not this, because an Austen novel was her writing about her society and people she knew. And it seems like the modern ones are creating these stories of the structured society in order to kick against it, in order to create heroines who do not. And I mean, Gone with the Wind is actually, like, I guess there's a lot of things with that book, but is kind of a similar sort of book, or even, I guess, maybe something like Vanity Fair more so than Austen, which is where you're really, but I guess Gone with the Wind is more accurate because it really was about past history. And you're taking a more modern character and, you know, putting them into this, the structured society, not because you like the structured society, Dave,
right,
but because you're actually trying to give them, to say, okay, my character's special because she's not like these other timid girls.
Right. And I get that. And I definitely think that Compromised has that modern lens of it definitely has that slightly modern lens looking back, but it wasn't early on in the story enough for me to really get a strong sense of that. Like I don't in the first 10 chapters. And again, I only read that, so it's like a third of the book or something like that. But there's not a strong sense of who these are. And in fact, I think it's like chapter 9 or 10 where the main male protagonist is asked a question by his by the girl's father of, what are you going to do with your life? You know, and that's the first time. And then we get this sort of struggle of, oh, what am I going to do? I just thought I'd be a, you know, and that's a great bit, because the father says something like, well, I didn't ask how much land you own. I said, what do you want to do with your life? And that's the kind of thing that I latch on to. And I guess maybe I kind of wanted that, you know, earlier. And I guess the kind of stuff that I like if you think about it from a male point of view, a lot of romantic comedies, the girl is what you get after you go, not because you're pursuing the girl most of the time, but because you're resolving some other dilemma about your life. And then she comes to you when you conquer that.
Because I want to sort of transition from that to something Sarah brought up in the discussion. We were talking about what can you learn from romance novels. And I think Sarah, you know, even if you're not going to write a romance. And I think Sarah had the idea of like making sure that you write a fully realized relationship. And one of the things that I really liked about Compromise, which I didn't expect because I clearly haven't read this type of book, is that it had the man's viewpoint fleshed out and the woman's viewpoint fleshed out. I do think it took a little long in the book for it to get there. But I think by the time I was like, oh, this is what this character wants, and this is what this character wants, I thought it was effective that she was really showing both of them. So neither of the characters could really be a prize for the other one to win, you know, because you had to really develop both of them.
That's a great point. I think I didn't get quite far enough to really fully get that fleshed out for me. And so I think at this point I need to finish it. And, you know, I'm determined now I'm going to finish it. I'm saying it right here on this podcast.
Well, and I think even in this one, neither character was actively pursuing the other, which is kind of a problem in more, I guess it makes some romance novels a little less interesting if it's just a single chase. I find that the standard structure is usually in the beginning there is a connection of some sort. There's a meet cute. There are sparks, whether they are, you know, crashing your horse into the lake or, you know, bumping into each other at a concert or whatever. And then there's some sort of conflict that keeps them apart. Whether it's personality, whether it's circumstances, you know, whatever it may be. But then that conflict also keeps them sort of literally, figuratively bashing up against each other so that they have to keep addressing this issue of there was a spark, but for some reason we can't be together. And then it's the resolution at the end. So I think it works better if they're not actively pursuing each other and they can't help it by the end of the book. But I think that may also be because that's what I dig about them.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree with that. I think that the romance novels that I really enjoy, the characters aren't really pursuing each other. They are preoccupied. They want, you know, they each want something else. And it's more about discovering, you know, what's special about the other person and all the conflicts they face in being together. And I actually don't think, Dave, that a lot of romance novels are about being swept away. I think they're about, you know, how are you going to end up being with this person? Why do you have this connection with them? And usually I think at least in the ones that I enjoy, I think the heroine, especially in the beginning, absolutely wants something else.
Okay. And that's fair. Again, I'm saying, you know, that's my stereotype of what it is. So maybe the modern, you know, romance market is different than what I think as well, you know, but that's sort of my perception of it. And so I just throw that out there. And Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting. And then on the flip side of that, I'm going to say, going against my whole stereotype, even in my own thing, earlier I mentioned the movie Say Anything, which is funny to me because John Cusack's character, all he wants to do is pursue the girl.
And oh, totally.
And it's her that isn't actually sure. And that's the character as a guy that I latched onto in that. And he specifically goes out of his way to say, I don't know what else I want to do right now. I just want to hang with your daughter. You know, I mean, that's his whole thing in that movie.
Dave, we need to have an entire podcast where we just talk about Say Anything.
Oh, we do. We need to Say Anything podcast for sure.
Well, I meant just one episode, but potentially an actual continuing podcast.
I was just going to say, so Dave, what it's actually you that wants to be swept away. That's what's going on here.
Absolutely. Why not? Come and get me. No.
You want the girl you're chasing to turn around and be like, hey, check you out.
I think that when I look at, I guess when I see those setups of like, oh, well, who are you going to marry? And it's all about that. It's not about the other things. I guess for some reason, going to what you were saying, Sarah, you're saying usually it's the girl wants something else completely. Well, a lot of times when you follow that other thing, it ends up pushing the book into a different genre, and it's not what I think of as romance. So I guess maybe that might be my own bias again, or not bias, but misconception about what the romances are, because I'm thinking, well, okay, if what the other girl wants is to avenge the death of her father, well, now it's a crime story, or solve the mystery of her father's death, or you know, whatever it is, or, you know, travel back in time, now it's a sci-fi story. And so, you know, I guess I think of the romance, when it's labeled romance, it means that the relationship is the most important thing in the book, and it sort of trumps the other elements. And well, that may be wrong.
I think it is. I think the relationship is the most important thing in the book, but I think that the relationship is what you discover while you're pursuing that other thing.
Yeah, and I think
it's how.
Go ahead.
I think it's how you know the book is over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the problem that I actually have with my writing. This is one of the few times that I've actually sat down to write a romance novel, but it's mostly because I'm just giving in. I tend to want to write these big, giant, epic stories that have all this, you know, interconnectivity and crazy whatever, but I can't help but write a through line that is largely one character's perspective, and the book is over when they hook up with the other person that's the other main character. And it's frustrating to me because it's like, that's not what I want to write about, but that's what comes out.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years ago, we do need
a human element to latch onto it. So I think you're totally right with that in terms of like, you could write a big epic fantasy and build a whole world and make a map and have all these interconnected relationships. But
and I do.
If you don't have people hooking up, then, you know, I mean, you need something human for us to latch onto and really.
But
get
like,
into.
That's how I feel like the book is over. Like, I know the conflict is resolved at the end of the book when, you know, the main character finds the person they want to be with. And it's like,
right.
I can't help it. I try
is that
to write.
Bad, though?
No, but. It's frustrating when I want to do something different. Uh-huh. Like, I tried
in other words, it's not slaying the dragon or it's not solving the murder mystery. It's the relationship that it always
ends
on.
Yeah, it's like, great, we slay the dragon, now let's hook up. Like,
right.
We learned a very important lesson.
Yeah.
Let's have some sex.
Sounds awesome to me.
Thank you. But when I try to not write it, it just doesn't. It's like I don't have a reason. I'm like, well, so she's just going to wander around the woods? Whatever. If there's not a hot guy to wander around with, what is she like? Why do I care? Why am I reading this? Why am I writing it?
And maybe is that the key to what we're talking about here? Because if I'm writing a story like that, I'm not necessarily thinking about is my main character going to hook up with the person at the end? I'm more thinking about, you know, where he's going to be at the end of it. And it's not necessarily in a relationship. It could either be crumbled out of relationship or it could be something completely separate that's, you know, like I said, it's a murder mystery or it's a this or that that puts the character, you uncover some truth about life or whatever, but it's not necessarily ending up with the girl. And, you know, I guess maybe I'm wondering if that's the key that we're talking about here, because I guess I haven't written a lot with that as the main objective in mind.
I think both what I like to read and what I've discovered, whether intentionally or not, that I write, and again, I don't finish long things, so we're talking about short things. I want / need there to be a couple of different things going on. And so I think so far why I've been resistant to romance as a genre. And I would maybe read some others that I think that compromise didn't really work for me. I think because I just have discovered I don't really like that Regency type setup. And it's not the writing, which I thought was good. It was just like, if I'm going to read a novel set in the 19th century, I want to read about people doing other things than being in this, particular closed set of society. But obviously that's a story some people want to read. But I would be interested in reading romance novels where it is like Sarah was describing, that's kind of about somebody who has a particular goal, and in the course of pursuing the other goal, they're going to be involved with someone else. Mm-hmm. But if I pick up a mystery, I know that what the genre sort of label on it tells me, this crime is going to be resolved. And I like that formula. Other stuff can happen while that's going on.
True. Now, going back to that, so if you picked up a book in the mystery section and it wasn't resolved at the end, would you be ticked off as a reader?
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's why romances have to have a happy ending.
Yeah, I understand it, but I don't. The goal at the end of it's important, and I'm not saying this is justified. I'm saying this is how my mind works. In a mystery, it's important to me to find out who killed them, because or whatever, or to if it's a heist story, to see how it gets pulled off, because that's what I'm sold from the beginning. A romance has to convince me that there's a reason for this one person to be with either, like, for most of Compromised, I was like, well, any of these people could get married to any of the other people, and I would be fine with it. So it was almost too nice. And then there's the problem that you have with, like, a lot of romantic comedy movies, is that all the guys are dicks, so I don't care. Or all the women are terrible, you know? So in other words, if it's a quest story or a mystery story, the author has to work to get me not to care. I'm instantly going to care. If the resolution that we're getting to is, are these two people going to get together or not, I need to have a reason to care about these two people as opposed to any other two people in the world. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Sad and cynical, but it makes sense.
It's the difference between Midsummer Night's Dream, which I want to mention because we're recording this on Midsummer, where it's these completely interchangeable people running off and having silly adventures and the elves are just messing with them, versus Much Ado About Nothing, right, which is like, Beatrice and Benedict have to get together in that because of the way they are at each other from the beginning. And you have to, and you're kind of, if you like the story, then you're invested in the two of them getting together from the start. Whereas, Midsummer works on a different way. I can never remember who actually ends up married at the end of that. Does that make sense? Like, it's a random story that's about coupling as opposed to something that's about particular characters.
So to kind of, I totally see where you're coming from with that. And what this keeps making me think is, okay, so that romance aisle in the bookstore, why does that exist? And what puts stuff there and not racked with literary fiction? What do you guys think?
Because it's a lot of people buy it.
But I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is, I think it's kind of what Kelly is saying, which is there's a formula and the people have to get together, but it definitely has to be about that romantic entanglement more than anything, and then they sort of know that it's going to appeal to a certain demographic, and so they rack it, they put the cover on it that looks a certain way, because I think I might have a totally different reaction to Compromise if it had a different cover too. This is definitely aimed at a female demographic. And so there's
such a pretty dress.
Yeah, such
I have
a pretty,
no idea
pretty
what
dress.
The cover is because I have it on Kindle.
So what I'm getting at is, you look at something like one of my favorite novels is The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. Epic story, lots of love stories in there. There's lots of different kinds of love stories in there. Some of it is about a love of comics, love of escapism, but there's also, like a brotherly love, and there's romantic love, and there's all kinds of different love in there. But it's not no one would call it a romance necessarily, or wouldn't be racked with a romance.
Okay. Then I guess the flip side of that is, what about the books that you read that are in a different genre and are potentially ruined by the love story being so awful. Yeah, I think Sarah brought this up.
Right, yeah, right, okay.
I did bring that up because, I mean, for me, I've always, even though I didn't read traditional romance novels when I was a kid, I've always been like probably most drawn to the romantic elements of stories. You know, Han and Leia were my first ship, for example. So when that is part of a story, but maybe not the whole point of the story, if that piece doesn't work, I feel like it makes the rest of the story kind of stupid.
That's a really
good
point.
Am I going to get in trouble if I say that's how I felt about the movie Thor?
That's completely valid.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if you are pursuing a romantic line in there, it's got to ring true. And that's true of any relationship. So, you know, we could extend that to a divorce situation happening between two characters in a story. And, you know, but yeah, I think that the romantic relationship, the are they going to get together, is one of the just classic, most intrinsically human storylines we have, and something that we really latch on to. And it's got to be, it just goes back to what Sarah said. It's got to be true to your story, and you've got to serve those characters and, you know, see if that's where it's going. But yeah, I mean, I guess I want to push this into what our writers can do, because I know we have a lot of people that listen and they're not necessarily romance writers. But I think we've been circling around a lot about relationships. And so what can all these lessons of what we're talking about romance, what can we say to writers out there about how you can utilize these tools and bits and pieces of the formula in their own work?
I would say think about both what's going on in both characters' heads, and I'm trying to use that sort of in an equal way, but I see it most often because of the stuff I read in like crime novels that have a love interest who, I mean, I honestly, I don't care usually if there's a romance in the crime novel, but if a huge chunk of the book or a significant chunk of the book or a significant part of the emotional motivation in the book is about this relationship. And, you know, it's a woman who has probably left this guy or died or is being a pain in his ass or something, you know, or maybe she just improbably like shows up to help him. And like there's one of the later Raymond Chandler novels, he just introduces this girl who like follows Philip Marlowe around and, you know, has no reason to exist except to be a girl in the movie. And so it's kind of like, you know, you can make fun of romance novels and call them formulaic and lazy or whatever, which I don't agree with. But I'm saying if you're going to do that, make sure that the relationships in your books are as plausible as the ones that are in romances. You know, make sure that your character who's going to show up to be the love of this character's life is somebody who would actually, you know, spend 3 minutes with this guy, right? For whatever reason, good or bad. Right. It doesn't have to be happy.
That's a great point. I see where you're coming from with that, in terms of like the romantic relationship makes you, if you're really focusing on that, it really makes you think about these two people. And I think Kate Noble's book really really gets that right, in that as you guys are saying, it looks at both sides of these two characters and then brings them together. So she's really thought out both of those characters and how they might come together or might not come together, what the obstacles would be. And I think that's really great, because I think, Caroline, you mentioned crime fiction. I think that's one where I know you've seen this before in some of the books that we've both read, but you know, there are cases where the female character is supposed to be this all important figure, or, you know, at least a prize to be sought after, but there's really no thought. There's not any development given to that character. She is an object.
Beat the Reaper. She's
I wasn't going to say it.
Sharks. Like, but, oh, she changed my life. What, a shark ate her? Like, I don't even know.
Right. Yeah, and she's literally the object, you know, and yet what romance gets right, if done well, is that it looks at both of these characters and puts them together, because it really is thinking, how would these two come together? How would they fall in love with each other? What is it that happens between two people when they fall in love that changes things?
And then here's another thing. I mean, God, this is probably a whole new subject that I don't want to bring up toward the podcast, but romance structures are used in a lot of stories that are about the relationship between men, the relationship between among women, the relationship between families, you know, the whole, like a lot of the things that you see that are romantic, like, okay, a lot of people are still like, oh, X-Men First Class, right? That's a great, like Magneto and Xavier meet cute and then they do this and they do this. And whether or not you think that, you know, well, they're literally trying to suggest something about those characters. Or
yes, Caroline, we know what you think about Magneto and Xavier.
You know, or just that the people, or just that in the course of making a film like that, like I just gave that example because a lot of, there's been a lot of that sort of ink spilled about that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, looking at how you make these important moments between these characters for the relationship to carry the movie.
Right.
I mean, a lot of those are ideas that you also find in romance. You know, they're the sort of things that bring people together, the sort of understandings and misunderstandings that they have.
Sarah, was that something that you thought about with your book, with One Con Glory, about like, did you get to a point where you're like, okay, why do these two people fall in love, or what is the thing that they, or was it just a foregone conclusion when it was, you know, surrounding the whole Glory thing, or, you know, or did you actually think like, how do these two get together, and did it cause you to kind of go back and look at their two characters and how they might connect? What was your experience?
I think that this is something romance novels, when done well, do just incredibly well, and is sort of the what we're talking about as far as the lessons, you know, other writers can take away. But I did go back and think about, in every scene, sort of every key scene between them, what are the sort of emotional beats here? Like, what is each person thinking of this situation? What are they thinking every minute of this situation? How do they feel about the other person in every minute of this situation? And I think when you're reading a really good romance, that's what sort of makes you start to root for the characters. That's what makes it, you know, emotionally satisfying when they finally get together. That's why I love not just Compromise, but I love all of Kate Noble's books, because I think she does that incredibly well. And I think there's value in sort of looking at all your relationships when you're writing and thinking about, how do these two people feel, like really feel about each other in this moment. So when I was writing the book, I did sort of go back to each of those scenes and tried to think of like, okay, well, what are they both feeling about each other in this scene, so that it makes sense when they get together and it makes sense when certain things happen and all that.
I think that's such a good piece of advice right there. I mean, to anyone writing, wow, because you're making me think immediately about a novel that I wrote a couple years back and I'm in the middle of revising, but a romantic relationship is not a main thrust of this novel. It's a mystery, kind of a horror mystery thing, but there is a character in there. There's two characters that kind of connect, and now you're making me think, wow, did I really connect them, or did I just do that conveniently? And I really need to go back, and I need to look at those two characters, and I need to go back to her point, to her side, and I need to look at what she sees in this, in all of these events unraveling, because it is from the point of view of him. So it's really easy to not do that. And that's another case of Beat the Reaper, Caroline. But, you know, it's like it is all from his point of view. But that doesn't mean that me as the writer, that I can ignore going into her head for a bit, even if it doesn't make it onto the page. You know, her internal feelings don't make it into the page. Her actions have to reflect what I now know about her and about what she sees about this. So you just like kind of opened my, this conversation has opened my mind up to that right now. That's really great. I love that.
We have accomplished something.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why I wanted to be on this one.
Well, yeah, hopefully we have learned. Well, we're probably at a point of wrapping up. Because I know I had said earlier there were some things I wanted to get back to after the reading, but I think we got all those. So is there something that we didn't hit?
I think we got it.
Yeah, I think we did.
I think, to say Sarah's point even more concisely, it's pretty much all the relationships within your story are important. And I think romance novels showcase what it's like when that important relationship is in the forefront. And so that's what you can take away from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I almost want to say, like, you know how they sometimes say, you know, if you want to write good fiction, don't just read other fiction books, but go like read a newspaper, get some like interesting things from real life and bring it back. I almost want to say, like, then you could go read a romance novel, get some interesting things about relationships and see how you can use that in your story. You know, because those good examples of romance novels, from what I'm hearing, are, you know, really good examples of fleshed out characters interacting with each other. And it doesn't have to end up being a romance, but it's a good way to look at characters and their interaction in a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, do we want to wrap up by talking about, let Sarah go first because she's our special guest. any current projects that you have?
I've been working on the script for the One Con Glory movie.
Yay,
which has sort of actually made me go back and look again at all the, what is this person feeling, right, in the, you know, every single minute. I'm also working on a new book, which also is sort of a, does have some romance in it. I don't know if it is a romance, but we'll see.
Cool. Kelly, I really want to hear about this romance novel of yours.
So, okay. On the fantasy podcast, the Show Your Work segment that I did was about a woman named Charity who runs the tavern that basically all of the random fantasy novels go through, and she just wants them to all go away and leave her tavern alone. and while I was creating enough of the world to write that scene, basically enough of Charity's world, at the end of it, the meet cute happened without me really, like, I didn't know how to end the scene, and it decided to end itself by having this guy who was going to come in and be the rogue character that swept her off her feet and whatever and challenged her worldview. And so suddenly, like, that sort of exploded into, well, I could write one of all the different romance trope novels set in this world. And I saw them all laid out in front of me, and it was glorious and beautiful. And I wrote down like enough notes for about four or five of them. And I've started actually fleshing out Charity's novel. And so I know for the most part what happens. I've got a couple of chapters written, and it's super duper fun for me.
Cool, cool. Dave?
Let's see. I have not done a damn thing since the last time we recorded.
Well, it was like last week, though, right?
We did record. Well, it was actually a couple weeks ago, and it's just been one of those crazy, it's starting to get into summer, and there's a lot of things going on. But I really, at this point, I had a sci-fi story contest thing that I might try to do. I had like sort of a little bit outlined for it, but then I didn't get back to it. I have another short story that I want to pick up that I backburnered for a while, and now I really want to get back to my novel and continue revising it, because I've been sort of inspired by this podcast to kind of go back and look at some of the relationships in there. So I guess that's the kind of stuff. Oh, I'm going to be lettering some comics. We got drawn the first 8 pages of the Vostok project that Caroline, that we talked about last time on the sci-fi podcast. So we got those back from the artist, inked, and I'm going to be lettering those, and we may get together a little comic in time for San Diego Comic-Con. So we'll see. We'll see what we do with that. But that's what I'm working on.
Okay, well, I do not know what I'm doing, because I've been focused on writing, you know, or I've been focused on procrastinating the piece I was supposed to write tonight. And, you know, even though this was fun, I'm not really sure that I'm going to continue.
I like where you left it. I want to know what happens next.
I do too.
Well, let me tell you, the first thing she's bad about is him using that song that they can't afford. That's the most important part, and then she'll work out the rest of it.
I did totally identify with her when she was like, "God damn it, that's so expensive." Wait a minute.
Yeah, no, it's like that. You're, and it's funny because I am absolutely not that person. Like, I'm not the person who thinks about shit like that. But I know that it is, and actually, it brings me, like, specifically as an artist who has gone with the recording industry to sue people for using songs without permission. So I was like, that's a bad choice. So I don't know. So I may play with that some more. I like those characters, but I still haven't really got a shape for it. I have a nonfiction essay that I'm supposed to be doing that's overdue. And then I'll kind of see what the summer is. I really want to, by November, by NaNoWriMo, to have like a sort of a original, like, well fleshed out project that I can actually make some headway with. And I'm not exactly sure. I'm still trying to figure out what I need to do to get there. And I kind of want it to be in fantasy or sci-fi, which I haven't really tried to do in a systematic way. So I have vague aspirations is what I have right now. All right. Well, thanks everyone. And I guess we need to give the information about, you know, who we are and where to find us. We are, you can locate us at thedeceptionist.org on the internet. And on Twitter, we're at deceptionists, no the. And Sarah, where can people find you on the internet should they want to do such a thing?
They can find me and my book and all that good information at alertnerd.com. And on Twitter, I'm just my name, at Sarah Kuhn, K-U-H-N.
And we should also mention the email address is contact@thedeceptionist.org. So you can send us stuff and let us know. We really want to hear comments from people because we get some comments on Twitter and some feedback on the site, but we really want more of you to comment and also to leave reviews on iTunes because we're having a lot of fun doing these genre shows, and I hope that they're helpful to everyone. And from the little bit we've heard, it sounds like they are. If you have suggestions for future shows, please let us know.
Yeah, definitely feedback on what we should be covering, what we could be covering, that's helpful. Some people have been sending us in stories because we gave out some prompts, and I think maybe on a future show we'll find a way to showcase some of those. So we appreciate that. And I guess individually, if you want to reach me, my name's Caroline Pruitt. I'm at Mad Marvel Girl on Twitter. I should probably change that to a real name at some point. Although I know, like, Sarah, you have a friend who is, like, so excited by that alias that I would feel bad if I would change it.
I don't think she would recognize you if you went by anything else, to be honest.
Anyway, what about the rest of you guys?
I am at Anna Luna on Twitter. It's actually on my business card, so I'm not changing that anytime soon.
Sounds good.
I'm at DeCampo, DACCAMPO. I'm not changing that either. It's got my name in it.
Does anybody else have other projects that they want to plug?
No, but I think we should plug what we're doing next, which the next genre is going to be crime fiction or mystery fiction. And we may not have labeled that so well in our original genre show, but we are going to be talking about every angle of crime fiction. So mysteries, noir, crime, hard-boiled crime. What does all that mean and what is it? So that's going to be our next show coming up.
Yeah,
and I believe Jim has the Show Your Work segment for that.
He does, and I cannot wait to see him stretch his wings and do a crime story.
That should be excellent. All right, yeah, and I actually had a conversation with someone who didn't, because if you go in a bookstore, it has a mystery section. It doesn't have a crime section. So I had somebody who thought that, you know, crime just meant it has to be about people who are committing a crime. And I'm like, no, I mean, it can be anything with detectives or, you know.
Right, they're solving a crime.
Cops or solving a crime. Anybody who's like, right. You know, there's crime and there's a plot. And then I guess y'all who are doing that can talk more about what's involved in that.
Yeah, you're already doing the next show, Caroline. Stop it.
okay. Sorry.
No. No, but you're right, though, that mystery is something that a lot of people associate a certain way. And so we'll talk about that next time for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot. We've been talking for a while now, but it's been awesome. So let's go ahead and do sign-offs. My name is Caroline Pruitt.
I'm Dave.
I'm Kelly.
And that's Sarah.
I'm a guest. I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything.
Go for it.
Give us a spirited sign off, Sarah.
I'm Sarah.
All right. We'll see you next time on The Deceptionist. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Okay.
And I'm Dave.
Alex Stevenson.
We are just always going to do that.
Okay. Let's can we redo this? Can we pause and redo this?
Sure. But I'm going to leave it in, or I'm going to put it in the outtakes.
Okay. Let's try again. Let's do alphabetical order by first name. I'm Caroline.
Jeez. Start over.
Okay. I guess I shouldn't have gone straight into it. I'm Caroline.
You make me feel like I am whole again.
I thought it was going to be very euphemistic and like not like talking about how large he is and stuff like that. So
just read too much Austin.
Well, yeah, I mean, clearly, but if the
Well, anyway, I think that's the kind of expectation set up by the start of it. You know, like I kind of thought the same thing because it's kind of aping that, not aping it, but it's kind of representing that type of romantic fiction, right?
Right, because so it's a Regency
romance. I would not have expected what Caroline just said about his size and whatnot. So I'm now, you know, I wish I had this
flipping to the end of the book.
I wish I had bought this as a paperback now because I chickened out and bought it as an ebook, and now I can't flip through.
Well, now you could just search for like the word "member," and ooh, you'll probably go right to it.
That's
girth?
What the search
should girth be.
Girth may be mentioned.